And this is The People's Game. I'm Alan Minsky.
I'm Jennifer Doyle.
I'm Fernando Romero.
And what was that music we were just listening to, Jennifer?
That was the Ghana All-Stars, and I hope I'm pronouncing the name of the song right. It's Oseye, and it was their official song for the last World Cup, and I think it remains their official song because it's such an upbeat and lively tune. It's a song that's actually sung by some of the most famous artists associated with the Ghanaian hip life movement. So I thought that our listeners might appreciate hearing that and perhaps imagining a different mood for the Ghanaian team than the one they're living with now.
And actually, maybe we can keep that rolling underneath us right now, and then we'll pot it back up before we go to our first guest. Nick Green will join us in a minute to talk about today's action, to preview tomorrow's action. And this, of course, is The People's Game. Now, the last time we were live on KPFK Radio, it seems like about three lifetimes ago, because all of us watch every World Cup soccer match. And then I can also add, as an interim program director at KPFK, we just finished our fund drive that lasted about as a long time, unfortunately. But we were through the fund drive. And thank you, people out there, for your support. And by the way, you can still support KPFK by going to www.kpfk.org. But, we've watched a lot of soccer games, haven't we?
Oh, my goodness. I think the bulk of my social life has actually been unfolding before 11 o'clock in the morning.
I'm revealing too much of myself. I took vacation time off just for the World Cup, and I've lost track of the days. I think I'm supposed to come back really soon, but I don't even know what day we're in, because I've just been watching football and soccer and just involved in this.
And as we made on the show, of course, a call for global football revolution by 2014 to insist upon all the powers that be that everyone in the world gets a vacation for the 2014 World Cup. Mm-hmm. That will be in Brazil. And we'll have much to talk about Brazil in a moment, but let me just say that we're going to be joined by an Uruguayan blogger and journalist, Lazar Trishan, later in the show. We're going to be joined by Miguel Paredes and folks from Soul Rebel Radio. We may be joined by a special German fan. We'll see if we can bring that chap on in advance of tomorrow's game. And later in the show, we'll be taking your calls at 818-985-5735. Now a little bit more of the Ghana All-Stars, and we'll be right back with Nick Green. Hello, and welcome to The People's Game. I'm Alan Minsky.
I'm Fernando Romero.
And I'm Jennifer Doyle.
And we are joined on the phone now by Nick Green. He has a marvelous blog called 100% Soccer. He's based here in Southern California. You'll be able to discern from his accent that he's not a native of Southern California, but he works at the Daily Breeze, and we've had him on very often because he follows the U.S. men's team very closely, but he follows all of global soccer and the World Cup. Nick Green, welcome to KPFK Radio Live, and welcome to The People's Game.
Always a pleasure.
Well, we certainly had some drama today in the early match and in the late match. The late match was there was so much drama in the last act of that. It's almost comical, but let's leave that to one side for a moment and talk about the first match, which was sort of considered the main event of the day going into the day, Holland versus Brazil. The five teams of the eight in the quarterfinal that really would be considered to have a shot at winning the trophy. Brazil was the favorite going into the match. They scored first. What happened then, in your estimation, Nick?
Well, if we were speaking right now at 9:30 in the morning, you would say that you just watched the game of the tournament. It was a pretty amazing game, wasn't it? The attacks of the Dutch just wore down Brazil. I know that their manager Dunga, who was the captain, of course, of their 1994 World Cup winning team, he's a tough disciplinarian. He was going out of his skull on the sidelines. We got some great shots, great camera work showing his frustrations. But the Dutch just wore down the Brazilians, and it's something you rarely see. And the Brazilians, for a span of 10-15 minutes, just lost it. I mean, Brazil have never relinquished a World Cup game that they have led, and the Dutch just came from behind and took it to them. It was quite an amazing sight.
Nick, I have a question for you. It seemed to me like the referee whistle was blowing like crazy during that match. Did it seem to you that the ref was overusing the whistle, or was it that there was a lot of gamesmanship and fouling going on during that match?
Strange that you should say that. I had a colleague here at the newspaper say exactly that to me. I kind of disagree. I thought that was a very well officiated game. I thought that that Japanese crew really did everything that they needed to do, just as they needed to do it. I mean, there was even a moment of comic drama at one point in the second half when there was a foul and the Japanese referee ran towards the offending player and appeared he was going to produce a red card when he had the intention of producing a yellow one. And you could see he was laughing about it a little bit. So I just thought it was a superbly officiated game and very appropriate.
You know, just on yesterday's The People's Game, and by the way, you can find all the archived shows on kpfk.org on the right-hand side of the front page of the website. Just click on Pacifica Radio, The People's Game. There's an image there, and it will take you to a page that can lead you to the shows. Or go to www.thepeoplesgame.org. Just on yesterday's show, we had Alex Bellos on, the author of Football, The Brazilian Way of Life. And he and I were talking about, is this the best Brazilian defense ever? And he, you know, basically the gist of the conversation was, if it's not the best, it's one of the best. And in particular, they're strong in the air. Well, a pretty basic cross into the box by Wesley Snyder was their undoing. And I still am shocked by that. And seeing Julio Cesar mess that up as badly as he did.
Well, the goalkeeper is always the weakest point of any Brazilian team, and usually that's just because they're so stunning on offense that that will be the case. But yeah, that was an incredibly bad mistake. I really don't blame Felipe Melo, the defender who was blamed for that own goal. I really think it was the goalkeeper's fault, don't you?
I don't know. The rest of the world is really laying into Melo.
And this is Fernando speaking. I want to say that in regards to that particular play, I think Julio Cesar should have handled it. I mean, as a goalie, you should always know when you come out of, to get that cross, you should like ransack whoever's in your way, even if it is your teammate. And I think Julio Cesar should have just gone that ball, just punched that out. But what happened.
Well,
absolutely. I agree with you. It's his responsibility to marshal that penalty box, and he is the one in control, and he's got to yell at his defenders. So that's why I don't blame Melo for that own goal. We can blame him about some other stuff in that game, obviously, mm-hmm. but not that own goal.
But, of course, Melo made the pass through on the first goal by Robinho, so he had quite a day. But in 15 minutes, this absolute, you know, team that was going to just roll through the tournament like a, you know, with solid defense, great goaltending, completely came undone and bye-bye until 2014 on the global stage.
They really melted down. Very uncharacteristic for Brazil. Very uncharacteristic for a Dunga coach team, as I pointed out before. I really think that's a tribute to the Dutch. You know, Wesley Snyder was just in great form today, and so was Robin. I mean, they just played a marvelous game. You're always tempted to use the term clockwork orange. That's the way the English tabloids always like to say it. But it really was a case of a very technical team against a very passionate one, although with a very well-marshaled defense, as you point out. And it was just an enthralling game to watch. It was really fantastic.
On to the second match of the day. Now, after that first match ended, I was hard-pressed to imagine that we would have a hard time remembering the first match after the second match. But the amount of drama that unfolded in the Ghana-Uruguay match, especially at the end of the match, was just astonishing.
For the listeners who haven't seen the last bit of the match, it was basically match was went through regular time and went into extra time. It was a draw until the very last seconds of the game. Ghana, in the last few minutes of the match, were attacking. It seemed like actually they had broken things open, and there was a scramble of assault on the goal, literally, as the clock was winding down. You know, and it was shot on goal, repelled, shot on goal, repelled, shot on goal, a header into the goal, where we're standing, two defenders. One of them being Suarez, both of them raised their hands to ward off the ball. Suarez swatted the ball out of the goal. And that is a red card. But in soccer, when this happens, the goal is not awarded. Rather, the offended team gets to take a penalty. And then Ghana's a terrific player, actually known I believe for being a great clutch guy and handling stress.
The guy who eliminated the USA with a goal.
Guillen,
four years ago.
Yeah, and he hit the top of the box. He hit the crossbar, and went into penalties, and Ghana lost on penalties. I was alone in my apartment, and I heard my neighbors screaming, and I had to run over to them and keep company with them during during the penalty kicks, because I couldn't take it. It was literally one of the most dramatic moments in the whole of soccer history.
Right. Compounding the tragedy is this was an opportunity for Ghana to move into the semifinals, obviously the only African team remaining in the World Cup in Africa, and to face not Brazil, but Holland, a team that they would be given at least something of a chance against. And this guy had an opportunity to hit the penalty kick and didn't make it. And then they lost on penalty kicks as the Uruguayan goalie saved two. And, Nick, what did you make of the match, just sort of going back into the earlier parts of the match?
Oh, can I even remember the earlier parts of the match?
Yeah.
So dramatic, and I'm so exhausted at 7 o'clock at night after starting on a football day of 7 o'clock. Well, I mean, the thing I was thinking about early in the game is there for the odd refereeing decision and the odd mistake. This could be the U.S. playing Uruguay. I was trying to keep that in mind a little bit. but it was the end of the game overshadowed the rest of the game. I thought that Uruguay controlled quite a bit of the game until the very end when Ghana just came at them, wave after wave after wave. And I'm with Jennifer. That ending, I mean, I just felt for that guy so much. I mean, he blew it himself. He had the chance to win that for Ghana, to win that for an entire continent, and he just blew it off the crossbar there, all by himself. The goalkeeper didn't even touch it. And this is the guy who scored twice previously in this tournament on penalty kicks. This was third time unlucky. An incredible end to that. Well, it wasn't the end of the game.
No, yeah, sadly.
we'll have in a few minutes on Lazar Trishan, who's Uruguayan, and get the Uruguayan perspective. And boy, talk about a country with a very small population and probably as overwhelmingly as you'll ever see in a soccer match, probably the whole world rooting for Ghana. And, you know, it was very impressive, just again in terms of the sociology of the tournament, that Ghana was completely embraced. The South African team, for those who don't remember, was called Bafana Bafana. Well, Ghana had been embraced and were being called Bagana Bagana. And the South African government, the ruling party, the ANC of South Africa, had asked them to change their name from the Black Stars to the Black African Stars. And here it just seemed like at the very last moment of this 120-minute game, they had succeeded, and instead the ploy by the striker Suarez from Uruguay, the tactical sort of courageous decision to throw himself on the sword for the sake of the team.
Oh, Alan.
You don't like hearing that, but of course this chap Suarez is now what a hero he is to the to the Uruguayans. We'll hear about that from Lazar Trishan. Your thoughts just on the tragedy of it, because it was quite a tragedy.
I've called it La mano del diablo. If the hand of God is works towards scoring, right, works on the attack, then it's the work of the devil, right, that blocks the shot that would be a goal.
Right.
It's a cruel fact that the hand of God, basically you get away with it if the referee doesn't see it. There's no way to miss. Right, the hand that blocks a goal, right? That's going to be completely visible, and there's a way of handling it, but that striker doesn't get the goal back. So it's a profoundly cruel fact, and there's a lot of conversation now, like, oh, maybe that rule should be changed, because it is really galling. And the way the rules are set up, Suarez is doing something that it's not allowable, right? He's accepting the consequences for it. But it's gamesmanship. He's gaming there, and it's become so integral to survival. And you're trained, in essence, to do this to a certain degree. And also, I don't know that a defender who wouldn't almost reflexively and instinctively do anything. I mean, I think your whole body would actually be put in the service of blocking that shot, even knowing that you might be doing it illegally. It's just it's a knife in the back. I'm not even going to say it's a twist of fate. It was really brutal.
Well, one of the things, of course, you know, working on this show, and I, you know, obviously I want everybody to, you know, it's peculiar. We have this sort of political critique of soccer and spectacle culture on the show that we get involved in too. But at the same time, I love the idea of Ghana being in the tournament. The whole world is watching. Right. All of Africa is riveted by it. And now, instead of having this match of Holland versus Ghana in the semifinals, how much euphoria would there be taking place in advance of this match? Instead, we get Uruguay, and Uruguay completely hobbled, missing now Suarez, one of their best players, possibly their team captain. Yeah. So it's a real dud of a semifinal.
Fusile? Is that how you say his name?
Well, Logano's out. And yeah. Fusile's out, yeah. too. Another one of their best players.
Yellow,
and in fact, Suarez doesn't get to play against Holland. We can talk about this with Lazar. But again, we get a dud of a semifinal match instead of this fully euphoric match. By the end of the match and the penalties, I was really hoping Ghana would pull it out 100%.
It was just sad. Very, very tragic. It's one of those things that are just like Greek tragedies are made of. It's just like everybody's rooting for, you know, the hero, and then, you know, this happens.
Right. Nick, I was wondering what you thought of Kingson's performance, the Ghanaian goalkeeper today.
He's impressed me all tournament, and again, I thought he was very, very good. I mean, he's very underrated. The Uruguayan strike force of Forlan and Suarez is incredibly formidable. It's won a couple of new fans here in the office who just love the way the Uruguayans were playing. And I thought Kingston performed heroics in that Ghanaian goal to keep them out. It was a fantastic performance all around. It was a curious reaction to that save. You know, a lot of people thought that Suarez was a cheat in Twittering and in the blogosphere, and I really thought that was kind of unfair. I think anybody, any player, any defender at any level would have done that at that particular point in a game. It's really interesting to me that, of course, if Uruguay had conceded that last-minute goal and been out of the tournament, Suarez would be a villain in his country, I'm guessing, and now he's a hero. I'm very curious to hear the comments of the Uruguayan journalist you're gonna talk to later on, it's amazing how quickly perceptions can change.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left, and I want to talk just for a moment with Nick Green about the matches tomorrow, and we really do only have a couple minutes left. I've said all along, since Paraguay and Spain were matched up, there's really not all that much to say about that match, except Paraguay is almost certainly going to go into a defensive shell and see how long they can hold off the Spanish. Do you see it differently, Nick?
No, I agree with you completely. I've actually been quite impressed with Paraguay as they've progressed through this tournament. They're getting more and more confident, it seems. But, you know, holding off the European champions is a big, big ask for a very small country with a very limited pool of players. That's going to be a fascinating matchup. And the early game of the day. You know, Germany against Argentina, again, it's going to be very similar to what we saw in the Netherlands-Brazil game. You know, you've got a very technical European side against a very passionate, flamboyant, and skillful South American side, and it'll be interesting to see how the team of the Germans can face up to the individual brilliance of the likes of Higuain and that messy guy.
Yeah, and Maradona seems to just absolutely adore all the spotlight, because he just seems to grab a headline every few hours as it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. He's fun to watch on the sidelines, isn't he?
You've been watching these matches that Germany's been playing. You've been going to a place. Tell us where you watch the matches.
Yes, I will be there again at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. It's called Alpine Village. It's near Torrance. It's right off the Harbor 110 freeway in the South Bay part of Los Angeles. It's sort of an aging, kitschy collection of German stores and restaurants, but it's going through some renovations. It's under new management. The new manager's name is Otto, and it's become quite the hangout for German fans in increasing numbers throughout this tournament. They've got a cave-like up top, and they've got a nice place down the bottom too. I watched the England defeat there, bravely wearing my England jersey, and took a lot of, I must say, good-natured ridicule, but it's a fantastic atmosphere, and anybody in LA who is a German fan, and I will be a German fan because my wife, her mother was born in Germany. I will be a German fan tomorrow. It's a fantastic place with an incredible atmosphere to watch the game, not to mention 15 German-style beers on tap.
And I can let people know the one place that almost everybody listening will not be able to get into is an Argentine cultural center in Burbank that will be packed with a big screen TV tomorrow here in Southern California. And what as well, I saw the qualifier, Brazil versus Argentina, where Argentina lost, I think, 3-0 against Brazil.
Home,
yeah. And boy, the people were depressed then.
I believe the Goethe Institute in Los Angeles is also screening the match. So just to let listeners know that that's another option for you.
Right. And that's a large auditorium, and it's on Wilshire. In the center of Los Angeles. Nick Green, the blog is 100% Soccer. Thank you again for joining us here on The People's Game.
Always a pleasure. I look forward to the rest of the show. Take care. Have fun tomorrow, you guys.
Oh, yeah. You
Thanks,
too.
Nick.
Thank you.
And we're joined right now as well by Lazar Trishan. His blog is called NoMoreOnionBags.com, and he is La Celeste, is it pronounced? Is one of the nicknames for the Uruguayan team, which means the sky, because of their sky blue jerseys. And Lazar is an Uruguayan partisan, a passionate partisan, and he no doubt is super sky high right now. How you doing, Lazar?
Hello. I couldn't be better.
You and, again, one fraction of 1/100 of 1% of humanity who was rooting for Uruguay in this match.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty amazing. I just got out of the hospital because I had a double bypass. you know, I think we may have had South America with us. I mean, obviously we respect Ghana and really support Ghana. You know, Uruguay has a strong tradition of Afro-Uruguayans. We had the first black players ever in the World Cup, or players of African origin, played for Uruguay. So, you know, we have strong connections with Africa, but
you don't have a guilty conscience that has to be worked through the rooting for the mat for different teams, in other words.
Yeah, do you hear me rationalizing that right now? So we respect them, but, we're a country of 3 million people, and for us to be in the top four teams of the world is just it's just incredibly great. My family in Uruguay now is telling me it's more than 1950 when we won the World Cup, that everybody's just going insane. I think it has to do with the nature of how it happened, but just talk about highs and lows, just incredible.
Yeah, imagine Eduardo Galeano, who, by the way, we very much want to interview for this show. So if you're listening, Mr. Galeano, please give us a call at The People's Game. He must be incredibly happy, too. He's a great Uruguayan author who's written eloquently on politics and soccer. Mm-hmm. And what do you make of Suarez's last act, at least before the final of the World Cup?
I mean, it was a heroic effort. In the interview after the game, he said, "Ahora la mano de Dios me pertenece a mí." You know, now the hand of God belongs to me. You know, referring to Diego Maradona's famous hand of God. This was a great, when Diego scored the goal against England with his hand, and when asked if he did it with his hand, he said it was the hand of God. I mean, Suarez is hand of God. Really, as Suarez also said, it's the greatest save in World Cup history.
Gordon Banks, take that.
Wow.
Okay, so let's look forward. I know you're probably not prepared to do this, but now you have Uruguay facing Holland, and you mentioned when we were talking earlier that there's sort of a sad subtext in that Suarez, of course, played brilliantly for Ajax in Amsterdam this past season, and he certainly now will be bought up by one of the big clubs given his performance, maybe as a goalie. I doubt it as a goalie. he won't be in the match, and it could be missing some key players for Uruguay. And the Dutch will be the prohibitive favorites by a landslide going into this match. Maybe exactly where Uruguay wants to be.
Exactly. I mean, we're playing with house money at this point, you know, and since we have nothing to lose. I mean, I was obviously cheering when Holland beat Brazil just because we can never beat Brazil. I mean, when we play well, like we played in Rio where we dominated the game, they beat us 2-1. And then when they came to Uruguay after losing a couple straight and being in crisis and we were flying high, they beat us 4-0. So, we can't beat Brazil. Holland's obviously a great team, but it is bittersweet for, Salto Suarez, because it would have been nice to have him be able to play against the country where he's, sort of made his name. And we lose Fucile as well, our left back, those interesting gray-dyed streaks that he put in his hair. Who won't be able to make the game? And he's been wonderful for us. But you know, there's a lot to be said for a team playing with house money and no pressure. And I think you saw that in the penalties. There was a team that was tight, with feeling the pressure of a continent, and then a team that was happy to be there.
Yeah, I thought Kingston seemed almost leaden in between the posts. And during the penalty kicks, I found that almost hard to watch, whereas the Uruguayan keeper was light on his feet, and he seemed 3 feet taller than he was. He was so up for the challenge. It was a terrific performance on the part of the Uruguayan keeper in the penalty phase. What would you like the game to be remembered for, if not Suarez's goalkeeping?
Well, the fight back was nice. I mean, really think about it. I mean, obviously, there were a lot of people with John, and it would have been a great story, but you know, Uruguay was dominating the game for 30 minutes, and then we had a couple of really traumatic incidents. Our captain, you know, went off injured, which is never a thing. You know, our real talismanic leader, Diego Lugano, you know, went off, which is, you know, really takes a lot out of a team, especially when our other great center back, Levine, had already been hurt and wasn't playing. So that was tough. And then that horrible injury for Fucile, where he was knocked unconscious, where he flipped over on his neck, and it looked like he might have broken his neck. You know, he ended up coming back in. I mean, Uruguayans are amazing. Nothing seems to bother them. But
broken neck, keep on.
You know, as a second generation, I seem to have missed that gene. But yeah, you know. So and then the goal at the end of the half, Uruguay had every reason to capitulate. The whole continent against them. Their captain out. These crazy things happening, and they found it in them to come back. And the goal by Forlan and the penalty. I mean. Yeah, you know, it's just the resilience and the toughness to come back and play with adversity. You know, Muslera, like, I think that's a great point you make. He's 24 years old. Goalkeepers aren't 24 years old. You know, goalkeepers are mostly in their late 20s and 30s, and 24 years old. And those last two, he's staring those guys in the eyes and saying, I know where you're going to kick this. Or the one we missed, it wasn't a save, and he saves two in a row to the same side. In their heads.
It's like he knew he was going to shoot exactly where he was going to shoot it at.
Yeah, second save was great. As you can hear, the music from the Ghana All-Stars they're keying the fact that we're at the end of this segment. I would just want to say this, a yes or no answer, Lazar. Diego Forlan, the player of the tournament so far?
In my eyes, yes.
I think a lot of people's. The website is nomoreonionbags.com. Lazar Trishan, thank you for joining us here on The People's Game.
Vamos arriba, Uruguay.
Take care. Up next, we're going to be joined by the folks from Soul Rebel Radio. We're going to take a little musical interlude again from the Ghana All-Stars. This is The People's Game. You can hear our previous shows at kpfk.org and at www.thepeoplesgame.org. We'll be right back with the folks from Soul Rebel Radio. And this is The People's Game, KPFK and Pacifica Radio's World Cup soccer show, where we talk about the games on the field. We also talk about the political, economic, and cultural subtext of the most popular cultural event in the world, the World Cup soccer tournament. And I do believe it's fair to say, and we've been talking to people from around the world, including in countries that aren't considered great soccer countries like India, and gotten feedback about the People's Republic of China even, this tournament is bigger than it's ever been before. So, again, I've said a few times on this show that the only spectacle event that rivals this is the presidential election in the United States for attention, and I think that's spread out over a year, year and a half, or whatever the heck it is. This is 1 month concentrated, and as much of the world focused on this as anything that human beings are involved in. So we look at it both for what it is as a sporting event and for what it is as a huge cultural and social political signifier. We're now joined by two folks from Soul Rebel Radio who usually hold down this hour here, and they'll be on in a couple weeks at 7 p.m. on Friday at KPFK. Axis of Justice will be back on its regular time slot soon, too. And Miguel Paredes, how you doing?
Doing great. Thank you for having us.
And introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Carlos Rubio, and I work for Soul Rebel Radio.
Well, guys, what do you think of the 2010 World Cup tournament so far?
Well, in terms of the actual game, I think the officiating's definitely been very disappointing. The other day somebody asked me, well, why haven't they introduced more technology? Why haven't they corrected all these problems? And I think, you know, dealing with FIFA as a conglomerate, the international conglomerate that it is, I think it stands to their benefit to not have electronic devices monitoring these games, because then they can do certain things to ensure that certain players and certain teams continue to move forward. So of course, you know, the United States got the raw end of the deal. Mexico, definitely, I was very disappointed that they got the raw end of the deal. But they're not the only countries. There's been several countries that have suffered the indignity of having the refs determine the outcomes of the games. But it's a beautiful game, and I'm very happy to have seen and been a part of this beautiful World Cup in South Africa.
And yourself?
Well, I just think it's great to see all of the countries come together and be so passionate about their stars, the people, just the fans coming together, and just seeing the faces and the expressions of them. I mean, the agony of defeat and the glory of victory. It's just great. But what I really enjoy is after the game, when everybody's done, take off the jersey and, you know, present it to each other in a game of sportsmanship. And fortunately, we haven't had any bad incidents in this World Cup where people have been very antagonistic. But tomorrow is Germany and Argentina, and they don't seem to like each other that much. So we'll see what happens after that game.
And which team were you a fan of going into the tournament, partisan for?
Oh, I mean, Brazil. Brazil's the team I was going for, and they took a bad one today.
And why Brazil going into the tournament?
You know, I think when I first started watching the World Cup, really, really watching the World Cup, it was in 1994, and that was the year that Brazil won it all. And they were one of the teams that I liked the way they played, but they probably had the most exposure, and that's probably what it was. It wasn't tied to any particular team. It was just the exposure, and I liked the way they played, and they won. And ever since then, I've been following Brazil.
And Miguel?
And for myself, I'm a wee bit of a nationalist when it comes to my soccer, so I was definitely rooting for the Mexican team to win. And so my choices were Mexico, USA. And I know you had my friend Andy Terranova not too long ago, and he talked about the virtue of rooting against the United States. And I think that as an American-born you know, person, Chicano, whatever, I think it's important to also root for the United States to win, not so much for the politics, but I really care about soccer in this country, and I think that we need to have positive examples for the young people to be able to look at and say, oh, well, this person did it, even if it's Landon Donovan, so I want to be like Landon Donovan someday. So I think that in order for soccer to continue to succeed in this country, there has to be examples that the young people can look at.
Yeah, I want to note to listeners, Landon Donovan returns to the Galaxy in the very near future. So it's one way to actually support some of the guys from the men's side is to make a point of attending the local matches here in Los Angeles for the Galaxy. But I do want to say about the question of providing a good example. I've actually been very cranky on my own blog about a little well-intentioned video created by Nike to thank the men on the U.S. Men's national team for all that they've done for the sport in their performance in this tournament. But they cast it only with boys. And I was kind of appalled when I was looking at these, you know, cute young players saying thank you for paving the way, thank you for setting such a great example, thank you for playing like an American. It's actually really kind of jingoistic and reproduces a lot of untrue ideas about the purity of the way that Americans, meaning U.S. national team players, play. But it's all guys, boys, and it's not only boys that support the men's team. And shame on Nike and the U.S. Soccer Federation for approving an ad which basically excludes half of the population that's been following and supporting the team. Mm-hmm. That's a small point, though.
Go ahead,
Fernando. Well, I just wanted to add what you were saying regarding the U.S. team, because I in regards to the immigrant community here, specifically in L.A., I know that specifically the U.S. team is – at least, I want to say, like, I heard a number that was, like, at least a third was either were either sons of immigrants or immigrants themselves. So it's really important to support the American team, because not just because you're an immigrant, but also because there are role models, and even it is Landon Dom, who was I think his father was a Canadian. I want to say, but you know, like the like people have been getting back, especially I'll say specifically this year. A lot of my friends who are either, you know, like I said, either sons of immigrants or daughters of immigrants who are supporting the American team, not just also their home country, but you know, it's also important to root for this team. Like you know, Mexico, but then USA. But you got to do that just behind and you know, show your support.
We'll talk in a second because I know the folks at Soul Rebel Radio are going to be preparing their own World Cup soccer show. But I do think it's very interesting that. You know, again, this is an important aspect of this show to recognize and to not be blind to the fact that I think the level of popularity of this spectacle in 2010 is like so much greater than it was in 2006 as it was greater than 2002 on and on. And it's getting bigger and bigger around the globe and in the United States of America. And given the fact that there's this sort of heinous right-wing nativism, racist right-wing nativism in the United States, and you see Glenn Beck and those guys object to the World Cup, object to the coverage of soccer, I actually think from their horrible point of view – they are sort of getting it right, and that we're getting it right too, because we recognize this is an entry into the most popular international community, or at least the clearest line to this mass community of humanity, which is global football. Now, we can talk about whether that's the best way we should have a global community or not, but at this hour of history, that's sort of what it is. And so I've said that largely, and I did in my conversation with Andrew about, you know, this is an opportunity to be part of a global community and to resist American nativism. Well, tell us a little bit, though, about what the Soul Rebels are planning on your World Cup show.
Well, we'll be talking for this World Cup, for this show, we'll be talking about everything regarding football and some things not football. We'll be talking about South African politics, hooliganism. I'll be doing a piece on Didier Drogba, the soccer star from the Ivory Coast, the Futbolistas Social and Copa Comunidad. It's a group that plays on Sundays, men and women, not experts, but people who are out there enjoying just the sport itself. But Miguel, he's been a part of the Futbolistas for a long time, and he could probably tell you a little bit more about that.
The two pieces that I worked on for this show that we're calling the People's Game, you know, in regards to the beautiful game here that we're all enjoying. The two pieces that I worked on are I did a piece on the Futbolistas, which is a group that I play with every Sunday. We're a group of men, women, skilled, unskilled, you know, older, younger folks that get together every Sunday. They just play, you know, soccer and play football with each other. And it's a really beautiful opportunity to create a space with other folks. And last month we went up to the Bay Area to play against a group called the Left Wing Football Club, which is also like a lefty kind of, you know, soccer club that exists in the Bay Area. So about 25 of us went up there to the Bay and got together with them, and we had tournament over two games. It wasn't no winners, no losers. It was just a chance to get together, make, you know, do some exercise and have some fun playing soccer. So we called that Copa Comunidad Dos because we did Copa Comunidad 4 years ago during the last World Cup.
You know, what's really great about the talking about that kind of football is that I think that that's really the kind of social space and sort of sense of community that defines the sport for so many of us. I think at the heart of our love for the game is how happy we feel when we're playing in those kinds of not games that are competitive on the one hand, but totally off the record, and through which you develop friendships with people you wouldn't meet through any other avenue, right, except for sharing this activity in this space, in a particular park. I know I never feel like I'm in Los Angeles quite so much as when I'm playing soccer in one of its parks, often in a hijacked space in an unpermitted game.
Right, and soccer, since its inception, has both in terms of anti-colonialism and in terms of working class solidarity, has been a source of both things among the people who play it, and can be a great organizing tool. And it's something that, again, when you see everything on Rupert Murdoch-owned TV and ESPN, that part of the game is completely under erasure. And, again, it's important for shows like this and communities like this to sort of take that back. Miguel.
Today, I don't know if the rest of you guys caught this, but today was Anti-Discrimination Day at the World Cup. I don't know if you got a chance to mention that.
No, we didn't, but it's true. Yes,
but,
right.
But, you know, I thought that was a really significant step, because when Major League Baseball is hosting the All-Star game next year in Arizona, and when, you know, all these other games in the United States really don't challenge or deal with racism head on. Like, you have a huge international conglomerate like FIFA, which has their problems, willing to challenge this. I think that's a huge step, and I think that's a good example for all the fans that are out there, and that's why we love this game so much. It evolves with us.
Yeah, it's another reason to admire some of its most famous players, players like Didier Drogba, but Thierry Henry and Lilian Thuram. They're all prominent, gifted, you know, among the top athletes in living in the world, and they've all taken very strong stances on important political issues and have pushed FIFA actually to use the World Cup as a space for heightening awareness about pressing social issues like racism and especially around football culture.
Well, in a moment, we're going to be taking listener phone calls here at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We really are interested in hearing from people about anything related to the World Cup, about the fact of the People's Game show being here on KPFK. So 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK is the number to call, and we'll take your question. So what did you make of L3 then?
They definitely had a little bit of a disappointing showing. I think that some of the young folks, like Memo, like Chicharito, probably should have been allowed to play a little bit more so than they were. I really didn't appreciate some of the decisions that Aguirre made, and he paid for it dearly because he will no longer be the coach of the Mexican national team. But I think, especially here in Los Angeles, I mean, there's so many people of Mexican descent. I mean, it was like, you know, when the Lakers were winning their championships, it was like half the people are flying Laker flags and half the people are flying Lakers and Mexico flags. So it was really great to see that spirit. I went to the World Baseball Classic a couple years ago, which is sort of like the World Cup of baseball. And in that, I saw like this level of competition, for example, between South Korea and Japan, which are two countries that historically do not appreciate each other. And they were very respectful. And I hope that that can teach some of the fans here in the United States about the level of respect that we should have for each other, regardless of what teams we root for and so forth. So yeah, Mexico was a little bit disappointing, but hopefully 4 years from now, when the young guys mature a little bit, we'll have a better showing.
Yeah, it's a young team with a lot of talent. I worry, though, because Marquez was such an important player for them in central defense. He'll probably be too old by the next World Cup. Mr. Rubio, you probably didn't expect Brazil to go out today, especially after that first goal.
No, I did not. Particularly with their last game, they were doing so well. That 3-0 game, I felt like they were clicking. They were coming together. I know there was a lot of criticism with the coach about them not playing the free flow style that they're used to. But they scored that first goal, which was beautiful, right up the middle. And all of a sudden, they just collapsed. I don't know what happened. Maybe they just got a little, I don't know, not nervous, I wouldn't say, but a little lax in their effort, or they thought they were just going to go quickly sweep into the quarterfinals, semifinals, and it just didn't happen for them.
You know, I was surprised, and we'll go to the first caller, Harold, in a moment in Los Angeles. We'll talk to him in a second, but I was surprised at how they were right up in the face of the Dutch at the beginning of the game and throughout the game. They seemed unnerved. And that seemed to be some of their, of course, undoing in the end when Felipe Melo got the red card.
Right.
But they just seemed to let the Dutch get under their skin. And for what it's worth, as I was watching this as a rather neutral observer in this particular match, I think the Dutch were happy to see them. I mean, Robinho was just yelling at Dutch players. And that's not really a sign of the greatest amount of composure. They certainly dominated the game when it was still 0-0 in those 10 minutes. So, and they sort of took the foot off the accelerator after that, too.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, but you know what? Hats off to the Netherlands for what they did. I mean, they were excited. They played a great game, and in the end, I mean, you have to leave it all out there. There's mm-hmm. nothing left. You put your heart and your soul into this every 4 years, and they definitely put their heart and soul into this game.
And actually, I have to say this because obviously Brazil, nobody was thinking this going into today, but they probably joined the list of really the titans of global football. You know, national teams that sort of imploded in the end in this tournament. You know. I mean, you got England, Italy, France, of course.
France,
so I was just going to say, I don't know if it's totally fair to say that they imploded. I mean, I think the way that they collapsed towards the latter half of the game, latter minutes of the game,
right,
especially
right.
that it was a classic kind of, you know, man hysteria. Right. I mean, it wasn't it's not at all unusual in these really competitive matches to see the drama and the red cards and the arguing. I think they were pretty much it's not. I just want to say out of respect out of respect for the Brazilian side, that it wasn't the complete implosion of, say, France or England or something, just to keep this in perspective.
Right, and they got to the quarters. And not Italy, my team in the past, not so much this year. They were just wretched. You know?
And we shouldn't underestimate the goals by the Netherlands today. They were spectacular goals.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, you know, when you get that kind of, you know, scoring opportunities and take advantage of them, I mean, Brazil, I mean, probably suffered from those two spectacular goals that were today. So.
Well, we're joined right now by Harold, who I believe is going to talk a little bit about the controversial handball in the Uruguayan match. Harold, welcome to the People's Game in KPFK Radio.
Yeah, well, thank you for taking my call. You know, I've been watching the World Cup for the last 20 years, and I agree with a comment by one of your earlier guests that something has to be done to rein in the power of World Cup officials, FIFA officials, because clearly the power that they have has not been used judiciously, and they unethically have determined the outcomes of too many matches. And being a person of African descent, and particularly being very watchful how African teams are treated by FIFA officials, I find a lot of the officiating particularly racist. It seems as if that African players are allowed to be brutalized by European and South American players and get little ticky-tack fouls called against them on a regular basis. And this notion of the hands of God relative to the Luis Suarez violation is totally ridiculous. That you had a guest on embracing unethical behavior is really beyond me. And while Luis Suarez may be a hero in Uruguay, I assure you that in the eyes of the rest of the world, he is a villain. And in fact, his hand was indeed the hands of the devil. And once again, something needs to be done to put FIFA officials in check, because the outcome of too many of the matches have been unfairly determined by them. And in parting, the same official that made the ruling against the United States, and when the United States lost to England, is from Uruguay. You know, Uruguay definitely has a problem. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Harold, on the People's Game. I want to remind listeners out there to call in with their questions at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. And before we go to Elliot calling all the way from Sacramento, Jennifer, your thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to say, I think that Harold is expressing the views of a lot of people who watch that game and a lot of people who are involved with the game, too, whereby the current setup and the rules actually encourage selling your soul to the devil to a certain degree. I mean, thus diving. You have to dive to a certain degree. You have to theatricalize fouls committed against you. Otherwise, the referees just won't call it. I've had this told to me by referees around a game situation. You know, if you don't actually stay down on the ground, we don't really necessarily want to stop the flow of the game. That's on an amateur level, but there's a professional version of that. And Suarez is in a position in which I agree with Harold, it was completely and absolutely shady, totally unethical. And yet at the same time, I think if I'd been a teammate of his, I would have been glad he'd done it. And, you know, right now there's almost no way out of this corner if what you want to do is advance. And if that's your number one, that's your only mission as a player, basically, is to advance. And FIFA and the current setup, they actually, they create the situation in which you need to have some shade in your game.
The number again is 818-985-5735. We're taking people's calls about the World Cup soccer tournament, any aspect of it, the political, cultural, economic subtext, the games on the field. And right now we're joined by Elliot in Sacramento. How you doing, Elliot?
Hi. I want to thank you guys for bringing up some good news to the table for ordinary people like myself to talk about. And so my question was, I'm actually from the Sacramento Gold, and we're headed down to San Diego to play at the Helix Field at 7 p.m., so I wanted to get that out there.
Oh, great.
My
awesome.
Question, yeah, my question is for you guys is, while we're on the road here, is what do you guys, if they don't actually want goal line technology during the game, what do you guys think about reviewing the goal or, you know, the so-called controversy of a goal crossing the line after the game and then awarding the goal to the team that scored? Like in Frank Lampard's case, they would review the goal after the game, and then they would add the point to the team that was awarded the gold, that wasn't awarded the gold. How do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, one of our friends who plays with the Futbolistas, her name is Leah Gallegos. She's the greatest soccer player I've ever played with in my life. She's a semi-pro, actually. And one of the things that she taught us when we entered a league was that you never allow the ref to make the calls. You always push the ref to make the decision in your favor. So if the ball's going out, you always assume that it's your ball. You don't ever let the ref, like, make that determination. You pretend like it's your ball. So I think that the in the game between England and Germany, that the goalie did an actually magnificent job of fooling everybody. But the one idea that I have is to take a page from American football, which is to give the coaches a challenge each half, and they use that judiciously and make that determination and maybe have that replay, or maybe that play replayed and stuff. So I would say give each coach a challenge that they can use once each half.
Wow, I've never heard that suggested. It's a really interesting idea. So what do you think of that, Elliot?
I think it's a great idea. It's just, you know, it comes to the point where we have the technology and we should just use it. We should use every other hockey's using it.
Yeah.
You know, so many other sports are incorporating technology into the game. It's about time for soccer, and it's just unfair. It's just, you know, sad that USA and England, Japan, all these teams that do so well.
Absolutely, I certainly think that FIFA has a challenge for themselves in the next 4 years. And I think the next World Cup will definitely look different than this World Cup in terms of technology, particularly with the replays. They're just going to have to get on their game and not let, I guess, these arbitrary referees, you know, settle the game. Let the players settle the game on the field.
Maybe soccer needs to incorporate like a sixth referee, one behind each goal, because in hockey they pay people $20 an hour to see if that ball crosses the line, and they have the goal line, whatever, technology.
Yeah.
So what, you know, what are we waiting for? I mean, I'm just a simple college kid, and I have solutions to the problem. And I'm from Sacramento, California, playing for the Sacramento Gold.
At 7 o'clock, right? Was it
in San Diego?
Yeah.
Hey, Elliot, thank you so much for joining us here on the People's Game.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
All right.
And right now we're joined from Eli in Pomona. Eli, welcome to the People's Game.
Hey, thanks a lot. First and foremost, KPFK, I never expected to listen to a program like this. it's just amazing. It makes me laugh, believe me. Now,
are you happy about it? Are you happy? Are you happy about it, being on KPFK?
Yeah, you know what? It's awesome. It's great. I mean, I'm thrilled. Let's put it that way.
Great, great. Well, what's your thought on the whole World Cup? Any aspect of it, Eli?
Well, you know, we're. I think that some of you guys are a little confused in there. I mean, the game. As far as I can remember, the game going back to 1974, the World Cup in Germany. The referee is always being the same thing, and it's not a matter of being fair or unfair. I mean, it's. It's the nature of the game, and just, you know, just leave it the way it is. As simple as that. I mean, today is Brazil out. Tomorrow is going to be perhaps Argentina, Germany. Too much about the referees. Just leave them alone. Leave the game alone. And that's pretty much all I have to say, you know?
Well, you know, it's funny because there have been a few thoughts. One is that, of course, FIFA likes the fact that there's all the controversy that grabs the headlines, creates this extra sort of layer of discourse. People have commented on that. Other thing about FIFA, for all the criticism of FIFA, and I agree, they're a peculiar organization in structure, that they do put on the most successful event in the world. I don't think anybody can argue that. And but one of my things about the refereeing in football, and I played competitively back in the 1980s, is that the game is much faster. The athletes are much better conditioned. To have the one referee on the field try to keep up, you know, I felt this as an Azzurri fan with Italy in 2002. Totti didn't dive. I mean, Francisco Totti has taken dives in his career, but he didn't in 2002. He got red carded and they lost to South Korea. And it was a thing where the ref was nowhere even close enough, remotely close enough to have a chance to make a call on that. That play happened so quickly down the field. So I don't know. I think something should be done, and I think something will be. But I really actually hear your point as well because, you know, if England had come back and tied Germany, that game would have been different. But England had no business tying Germany at that point in that match because Germany was beating them all over the field that entire game, and they deserve their comeuppance in the way they have.
The one thing about the game that has changed in recent years that I think does impact this is that the viewers and the people in the stands are seeing more detail and more of the game. And so when you have some of these incidents broadcast on jumbotrons in the stands, broadcast immediately to television viewers, I think this is one of the foundations of the controversy around the refereeing in this World Cup. The difference between the technology used for this World Cup and the broadcast in terms of the visualization of the game is a huge, giant leap forward from just the last World Cup, and that's a big leap forward from the one previous to that. So I think this is one of the reasons why this issue has become especially acute, because you're right, it has absolutely defined the game since the very beginning of the game. And I do think there is something to wanting to not let go, actually, of the certain elements of ambiguity in the game, because that makes for some of its drama and some of its most intense and memorable moments.
Hey, Eli, thank you so much for joining us. One final quick question. Which team are you rooting for of the six remaining?
I don't know. I mean, Germany, it seems, the one to make it to the final.
Oh, no, thank you so much. Well, thank you for that, Eli, and thank you for joining us on the People's Game. And now we're going to be joined by Mark from Inglewood. Welcome to the People's Game. We're going to go a minute at a time for the phone calls for the rest of the hour. Mark, welcome to the show.
Listen, I wanted to talk about the situation of soccer in the United States. In spite of all the positive signs, the more people watching the games now, I really do think that the game, soccer, is destined to remain a stunted, a stunted sport in the United States, because a major amount of capital is already committed to the major American sports. And since this is a matter of money, those major sports are not going to be willing to open and allow soccer to be a major, competitor for athletes, ticket sales, and money. And that's basically how I see the situation of soccer in this country. It's not that there's something in the genes of Americans against soccer. It is simply that it cannot attract the huge money necessary to establish it, because that money is already committed to the other sports, baseball, football, American football, and basketball. And there's one more thing I want to say. I would never support the United States team as long as it has Donovan, who's an anti-Mexican racist, playing for it. He has said very nasty things about Mexicans.
Okay, thank you very much for that, Mark, and thank you for joining us on the People's Game. Miguel and Carlos, your thoughts on both points, and then Jennifer's thoughts.
One of the things that I actually agree with the caller is that it's soccer, is going to be harder for soccer to become a big-time a big-time sport here because of the money. But I think one of the other reasons, a major reason, is that soccer is not a game that the United States is very proficient in. They're very proficient in basketball, football, somewhat in hockey, but as a team sport, soccer is one that they are really coming to the forefront, but they just haven't made it yet. And I don't think the United States likes to be in a position where they are not on top.
You know, I'm going to say something about that, which is that one of the reasons why the sport perhaps isn't as developed as it could be is because the communities of people who love the sport the most and who would play it from sunup to sundown and well into the night are underserved and have a difficult access to getting fields. Their schools have really crappy athletic programs. Nobody talks to these kids about using sports to go to college. You know, there's a really underserved community of kids who are players who would love to have their talent developed and networked into their education in the way that is true for kids in other parts of the country in better school districts with more resources.
Absolutely. We have about 30 seconds left on the show. Miguel, your final thoughts.
Yes, 45 minutes of uninterrupted soccer does not allow for good enough commercial time.
Right.
So that's why it will never take off in this country. But for all of us who love it, we will continue to support it. Thank you, Alan, for putting on this beautiful show about the beautiful game. And I hope the next 4 years from now we'll do it again.
Oh, we shall. And people tune in 2 weeks' time, I believe. Soul Rebel Radio will have its show, The People's Game.
Absolutely. July 16th, we will be airing 7 p.m. check us out.
And I want to let people know that the People's Game will be on KPFK again live tomorrow at 10 a.m. Digital Village are taking the holiday weekend off, so we're putting the People's Game on. They said, hey, we're going to take the weekend off. We're going to put the People's Game on because this is a hot topic in the world right now. Tune in tomorrow at KPFK 10 a.m. for another installment of the People's Game. Check us out on the web at kpfk.org and www.thepeoplesgame.org. I want to thank Fernando Romero, who is in master control right now. I want to thank Devin Jordan and Jennifer Doyle. I'm Alan Minsky. This is the People's Game.
Viva.
Every day of the 2010 World Cup Soccer Tournament, KPFK and Pacifica Radio is producing a daily show called The People's Game. You can find The People's Game by going to www.kpfk.org and in the right-hand column, click on the sign that says Pacifica Radio, The People's Game. The show keeps up on the events on the field as well as the political, economic, and cultural subtext of the most popular event in the world. So listen daily to The People's Game from Pacifica Radio.